All right, moving on with Air Talk here on 89.3 KPCC. Dr. Robert Kim Farley joins me now. And doctor, we do have some major news on the pandemic front. On Saturday, the Food and Drug Administration authorized Johnson & Johnson's one-shot vaccine for emergency use. The U.S. is expecting to get 100 million doses by the end of June. Of course, locally, we are seeing a steady downturn in new cases, deaths, and hospitalizations. But things are still in the purple tier for L.A. County, at least. We're also learning more about the inequities of the ways that COVID-19 has hit different neighborhoods around Los Angeles and the way the vaccine is being rolled out. So I want to talk to you about a number of those headlines. First of all, thanks very much for being here on Air Talk.
Libby, it's a pleasure to be with you today.
So how about this Johnson & Johnson vaccine? I know there's a lot of conversation about its effectiveness versus the other two available right now. What's your take?
Well, I think we're very excited about having another player in the vaccine marketplace here because of the fact that, as you pointed out, we may have millions of doses more available to us. In fact, they're shipping out 4 million doses just this week. So that's very welcome news. The vaccine is actually very effective. It's been shown about 72% effective for disease. But basically, just like Pfizer and Moderna, it is really up there in terms of effectiveness for deaths and severe hospitalization. So that's very encouraging. The fact that it's only one dose makes it much more logistically easier to administer. And the fact that it doesn't take the extreme cold temperatures that the vaccines like Pfizer take also make it much easier for distribution to more remote areas of the state.
And that's huge to get to rural areas, to get to places that don't have health clinics or people who are not mobile. They can transport that Johnson & Johnson vaccine in a cooler, which is pretty amazing. I want to take a moment to ask folks to call in if they do have questions for Dr. Robert Kim Farley, 866-893-5722. It's your chance to ask a question of the doctor related to the pandemic and COVID-19 and safety and all that. 866-893-5722. You can tweet at us, go on our AirTalk page on kpcc.org, go on our Facebook page, all kinds of ways to ask a question. And doctor, I'm seeing that, you know, some folks are wondering if there will be a hesitation about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, just because I think the average consumer has a hard time processing what it means when you look at like a 60% effectiveness versus an 80% effectiveness. Are you fearful at all that people will be questioning of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine simply because they see those raw numbers?
Well, I think it's helpful to do just like you're doing here, trying to get people to come on and explain to your listenership, you know, what are the benefits and what are the issues surrounding these vaccines. Again, you have to look at the fact that actually the Pfizer vaccine and Moderna vaccine were not actually tested at the time when we had that South African variant that was, in a sense, going up against the Johnson & Johnson. So we don't really know what some of these other vaccines actually perform at the same level in terms of some of these variants. But all of the vaccines are really preventing virtually completely severe hospitalizations and deaths. So that's all three, Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. So they really have high performance for the things that you're worried about most, you know, being severely ill in the hospital and dying from this disease.
It sounds like the CDC director, in her comments over the weekend and also today, is concerned nationally about a plateauing of COVID cases. Are you watching these numbers and wondering if complacency will set in and we will see potentially a fourth surge?
I think we always have to be on our guard until such time as we do have community immunity reached, or herd immunity, as epidemiologists like to call it, so that we don't then see virus circulating in the communities. So until then, we just have to continue to make sure that we're masking, physical distancing, and getting vaccinated. So these issues will be able to keep us from having a fourth surge. if we did have a fourth surge, I think it would be much less than we have seen in this last one, just because this was driven by back-to-back holiday seasons. It was also in the absence of having any vaccine, and especially now that we've vaccinated the persons that are in nursing homes, many of the elderly now being vaccinated. These are the persons that suffered most due to severe hospitalizations and deaths. So I think that we will continue to see, hopefully, numbers that continue to go down, even though we may be approaching a plateau. Let's hope that we can go down, because that's still a pretty high plateau we're at. And that bottom line, once we get more and more vaccine, we'll be starting to see it even go further.
Dr. Robert Kim Farley, professor of epidemiology and community health sciences at the UCLA Fielding School of Public Health. And he served as the director of the Division of Communicable Disease Control and Prevention at the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health. He also was a former senior official with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the WHO. So he's very qualified to answer your questions about COVID-19. We're going to get right back to those in just a minute here. Again, 866-893-5722 to call in with your queries about the pandemic. I'm Libby Denkman in for Larry Mantle. Back in a minute. It's Air Talk on KPCC. I'm Libby Denkman in for Larry Mantle. In just about 20 minutes, we are going to be talking about the ethics of vaccines and the rollout that the state has been overseeing, who is getting in these priority tiers, because we just see today that there is an expansion of people that can sign up for appointments, including food workers, folks, teachers, farm workers, a number of essential worker categories got added. And so over a million people now are additionally added to the vaccine eligibility tier in LA County. And we're going to talk about the dicey ethical questions of what to do if you're offered to a chance to get a vaccine that would mean skipping the line. Would mean getting a vaccine faster than you are technically eligible for in the state. All of those really thorny ethical questions coming up at 11 o'clock with our panel. Want to stay tuned for that. In the meantime, Dr. Robert Kim Farley is a professor of epidemiology and community health sciences at UCLA, and we are taking your questions online, on social media, and at 866-893-5722. And Dr. Kim Farley, we have a question from Paris about the J&J vaccine. And Paris tweets at us, if a person gets the Johnson & Johnson vaccine early, should they think about getting one of the other two vaccines later?
Thank you, Paris. Not at this stage. Actually, we think that the one dose should be sufficient. However, for all of the vaccines, they're being looked at closely in light of these new variants. From California, homegrown one we have here, to the UK, to the South African and the Brazil. I'm sure there'll be many more in the future. And so whenever we get to a point where we think that the efficacy has been diminished to the point where it needs to actually have a booster dose containing some of these new variants, then that's the time that there'll be a possibility of having a second dose.
And would you, Cynthia from San Gabriel actually asked a question along these lines, would you then mix vaccines? Like if you got the Johnson & Johnson, would you later get a booster from Pfizer or Moderna? Or would you have to really stick with the company of vaccines that you first received?
Cynthia, it's a very good question. It really has not been researched, but is in the process of being looked at, of the idea of mixing and matching these vaccines to see whether or not there might actually be some benefit of doing that, in the sense of one catches a few of these points on the spike protein, another one catches some others, so maybe it's a more rounded approach to vaccination. But at the moment, we're advising that people stick to the vaccine schedules that have been tested and are known. But in the future, that's something that might be looked at.
Dr. Kim Farley, we have John on the line from Long Beach. And John, you had a question about the ethics of the way these vaccines are being tested. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you. the Johnson & Johnson is running a trial, at least in this area, called the Ensemble 2. And it's a double-blinded study which lasts for 2 years and 3 months. And if I were in that trial and got the placebo, knowing how serious the illness can be and knowing that there are vaccines that work, is it ethical to run a placebo for 2 years in this environment?
Great question. Go ahead, doctor.
Thank you very much, John. A good question. I haven't seen the protocols for that study, so I don't want to actually comment on the specific study, other than to say that any human trials that are being done for ultimately Food and Drug Administration approval have to be having institutional review boards that specifically look at the ethics. So again, I'm not able to comment on the specific Ensemble 2 trial, so I'm unfortunately not able to answer that specific question of yours. All I can say is that researchers are required to use ethicists and look at the ethical basis and have to pass institutional review boards before they can conduct human studies.
Thank you, John from Long Beach, very much for that really excellent question. And the ethics of vaccines is something we're talking about also in the next hour, you know, the ways that we get access to them and who gets access to them. Dixie is in the line here for a call. Dixie in Palm Springs, you're on the line. What's your question for Dr. Kim Farley?
Hi, my question is, what does he recommend for self-care when the reaction to particularly the second vaccine is particularly strong? I've heard nothing in that area, but I had a brother-in-law who got 104 temperature. So what do you do?
Yeah, and I've heard also, Dr. Kim Farley, that the second dose of the Pfizer or Moderna can be a bit of a doozy in terms of side effects. What do you think about that?
Well, thanks, Dixie, and your comments, Libby, as well. So if you take a small sample in our own household, I'm 73. My wife and I both had our second dose of the Pfizer vaccine. And, you know, she was pretty much without any symptoms, you know, other than a little sore arm. But actually, the next day for me on the second dose was kind of just feeling malaise and tiredness and a little bit of achy all over. But taking Tylenol seemed to do the trick. So I actually think that if you are experiencing some of the side effects, common side effects, you know, a bit of fever, achiness, that sort of thing, acetaminophen, which is the generic name for Tylenol, is a good approach to do that. And rest, and basically maybe prepare if you're getting a vaccine for the second time, especially it doesn't seem to as much after the first dose as it is the second. By that time, your system is immune and primed for this so that it's reacting stronger. You just plan to, you know, don't plan to be doing anything that second day if you can avoid it. That is going to take a lot of concentration, time, and energy. So maybe just if you don't have any problems, then you're one of the lucky ones. If you do, then you're prepared for it. Some rest and Tylenol will take care of it.
Dr. Robert Kim Farley with UCLA. Boy, I haven't been to a regular checkup at my doctor's office in more than a year, year and a half since the pandemic started. And you just talking about, you know, the basics of self-care and things to watch out for, it's so comforting to hear that. And I hope it's providing some comfort and clarity for people who are calling in and asking their questions. Herman is on the line from Fullerton. And Herman, you have a situation with your immune system. What's your question for the doctor?
Right. Well, thank you for taking the call. What's the recommendation for somebody who's already got a hyperactive immune system where you have an autoimmune problem or a lot of inflammation in the body? Should a person take the vaccines or not?
Thank you, Herman. I think because that's a specific, you know, question, I really think that it has to be done at your individual physician level. I'm assuming you're, you know, under the care of a primary care physician or specialist for an autoimmune disorder. And I think the best is just to ask them, you know, given your particular type of situation, what is best? For some people, the vaccine would still be recommended. For others, there may be a concern about, you know, anaphylactic type of reaction. They might not recommend it. So, or recommend one of the other kinds of vaccines. So I think it's a very specific question. It's a good question. It's one that you should ask a physician before just going and, you know, signing up to get the vaccine.
Yeah. Dr. Kim Farley is on the line from UCLA, and Tracy from Costa Mesa wrote in to ask about if somebody has been fully vaccinated. They've gotten both shots of Moderna or the Pfizer vaccine, or they in the future will get this Johnson & Johnson one-shot vaccine. Is it possible that they could be carrying the virus and be asymptomatic? And if they are carrying the virus, will that show up in a COVID test?
Tracy, very good questions. The jury is still a bit out on this question about whether someone who has been vaccinated could still, in a sense, be exposed to the virus and have asymptomatic disease where you don't have any symptoms, but then pass it on to someone else. That's why it's still at the moment we're recommending that even if you've been vaccinated, if you're around people who have not been vaccinated, that you still wear a mask and practice some physical distancing just to make sure that that possibility of transmitting to others would not happen. But we will know the answer to that, I think, within the next month or two, since we'll have more people vaccinated, those people being exposed, and be following them and seeing if there is any possibility of that event. But at least for those who have received the two doses of vaccine, you can begin to feel a lot less anxious and less concerned. If you've been not sleeping well because of your concern about getting COVID with the two doses, you can sleep well.
Yeah. Dr. Robert Kim Farley with the UCLA Fielding School of Public Health. He's on the line answering your questions about COVID-19 and the pandemic and safety. That is the, 866-893-5722 is the number to call. And you can also dial us up on Facebook. You can go on Twitter, send us a message on our show page as well at kpcc.org. I'm Libby Denkman in for Larry Mantle, back with the doctor right after this. KPCC Air Talk. I'm Libby Denkman in for Larry Mantle. Dr. Robert Kim Farley with UCLA taking your questions. And Carolyn from Tarzana wrote in asking, with J&J, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, having less efficacy than other vaccines, does that have any effect on the severity of potentially contracting COVID and or spreading the virus? If so, why should we take it? Now, Doctor, I know that you were mentioning the testing for Johnson & Johnson. It's not apples to apples with the other vaccines. I think that Carolyn's question shows, though, that the persistent idea in the public's mind is that Johnson & Johnson, well, saving you from, you know, severe effects and death, it's not as effective overall as the other vaccines. What's your answer first to Carolyn about, you know, should we really take it? What are you hoping to get the message out about the J&J vaccine so that people either, you know, understand it better or feel better about it?
Yes, thank you, Libby. I think Carolyn's question is one that's on the minds of many people. But I often just say, you know, the best vaccine for you is the one that you can get. You know, we start our limited supply of vaccines. So whichever one you can get first, when you're eligible for it, is the one to get. And the main thing that we're all concerned about is being protected against, you know, severe disease, hospitalization, and death. And all of these three vaccines are very protective for those indicators.
And I think, again, that this shows that public health education and communication is very difficult because, for example, you let me know earlier that the vaccines, all three vaccines, were tested under different circumstances. So when these more contagious variants have been spreading, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine was in the field being tested, but Moderna and Pfizer, for example, were earlier than that. And so they probably didn't have to deal with the more contagious strains. And so the results when it comes to effectiveness, we can't necessarily compare one percentage of Moderna and Pfizer to what's going on with the Johnson & Johnson because these tests were not under the same conditions. Am I understanding that correctly?
You're exactly right, Libby. And I thank you so much for, you know, really, I think, well articulating that to your listenership, because that is exactly the situation. And we will be looking over time with all of these variants how all three of these vaccines in fact, respond and are doing. So, and if necessary, all the manufacturers are prepared to make tweaks to the vaccine formulation to make sure that they are as efficacious as possible against these variants.
We have a fun follow-up from a question that we had earlier. I believe it was from John in Long Beach asking about these double-blind studies for Johnson & Johnson. Ray in Laguna Beach says he's in the study. Ray, what do you know? What's going on?
Yeah, hi, good morning. So, yeah, I signed up for this study. Tomorrow at 1 o'clock, I get my first shot over at the test lab in Long Beach. And I asked that same question, will I be possibly with a placebo for 2 years? And they explained, no, that won't happen, that when my name comes up in Orange County through the Athena system for the Pfizer or one of the other shots, I'll then notify the test lab. They'll let me know if I have a placebo. And if I do, then they'll let me get the regular shot.
Oh, that's so good to know. So once you actually come up in the eligibility tiers for a vaccine, the researchers are not going to like let you go without vaccination if you did have the placebo in the test. So that's great to know, Ray. I really appreciate you calling. Isn't that wonderful to hear from the AirTalk audience and know what kind of network is listening? And we had a question about a study, and then we have Ray calling up. He's part of the study. So thank you very much for that. You know, just a couple more minutes here with Dr. Robert Kim Farley from UCLA's Fielding School of Public Health. A number of folks on staff were wondering about some headlines that we saw, wondering if folks who have vaccinations, that they are fully vaccinated, can still become susceptible to COVID long hauler symptoms, and also the effects that the vaccine has on COVID long haul symptoms. I know it's not a fully understood phenomenon, but what do we know about vaccines and the long hauler condition?
Yes, thank you, Libby. And I also wanted to join you in thanking Ray for having called in. That makes me feel very comfortable again that obviously there were ethics being looked at very closely and that are not being compromised in that study.
I love that.
Yes, the long hauler syndrome is, you know, something that we're learning more about, the idea that you can have altered smell and taste for long periods after having COVID, or consistent fevers, or some shortness of breath, these sorts of symptoms. So, you know, we're really having to follow vaccines out and also to see how they will affect this. It's anticipated that vaccines, obviously in protecting the disease, will also protect against these long hauler type of syndromes that people are having. And there's even the possibility, and this shall be very interesting to see too in research, that those people who have long hauler syndrome, whether vaccine, in fact, might be helping to overcome that. Some people feel that maybe there's this virus lingering in the body that the body has not been able to clear after having disease, and that's causing the long hauler syndrome, whereby if you could give a vaccine that could then maybe take out that remaining lingering virus, that may help cure your long hauler syndrome too. So we don't know yet. We'll be looking at those questions.
I'm feeling like the COVID long hauler situation is falling into a category like Lyme disease that is not very well understood and often taken as something that people are, you know, making up in their heads, that it could be, you know, something that is psychosomatic. What do you think about the way that long haulers are being received by the medical community, and is there enough being done to really look into what they're suffering from and what's going on?
Well, fortunately, I think it is being taken seriously, and some of these things, like, you know, consistent fevers, that can be measured. It's not just someone saying, you know, I feel warm. Shortness of breath can be measured, you know, with machines to be able to look at inspiration, expiration, things like this. So I think it's a real phenomenon. And again, studies are ongoing to figure out what we can do to help alleviate those.
Dr. Robert Kim Farley with UCLA's Fielding School of Public Health. One more question because we're up against a break. Folks are asking about the school's reopening plan and the announcement from the governor this morning. Anything you can tell us about the young people that are potentially going to be back in school in greater numbers, at least the elementary school students, by April 1st. Anything you know about schools and transmission rates?
Well, firstly, school opening is welcome. I mean, our children have been away on remote learning. Some have not really thrived under those conditions. So being back in a classroom will be very good for their learning. But we want to make sure those classrooms are safe. That's one of the reasons $2 billion in grants are being given to transitional kindergarten to second grade for being able to make sure that, you know, physical distancing is being done in classrooms, good ventilation systems, things like this are being done. And now by also bringing teachers and staff of schools into the targeted test vaccination, that's another thing that will make school opening possible.
Dr. Robert Kim Farley with the UCLA's Fielding School of Public Health, thank you very much for being here on Air Talk.
It'll be my pleasure.
I am Libby Denkman, in for Larry Mantle today. Coming up, the ethics of the vaccine rollout, and we want to hear your stories. Again, it's Libby in for Larry right here on Air Talk, back in just a couple minutes.